everybody has to exit through the gift store, as you know. And the other end, it's open. That's where the queue lines are. And so they go in there and they line up under there. We have quite a large number of 55-inch monitors under there and speakers. We hired actors, as I said in the presentation that I gave, who for Noah and one of his sons and his wife, and then there's a group of reporters coming from a pre-flood tabloid newspaper, and the group of reporters are scoffing at Noah and interviewing him. It's quite humorous in places, a lot of teaching as well, but people watch that, then they go up this massive ramp system that'll when you see it, it'll blow your mind, and then they go into the ark on the first deck. And then the first deck is set up with all these cages. They're set up to show how the animals were watered and fed. They're all functioning cages, even though there's no live animals in them. But you do hear animal sounds. And then there's exhibits about animal care and how Noah could have fed them, and water and air through the ark. As they go up to deck two are more deck two are the themed exhibits. And the themed exhibits, there's Noah's workshop, his blacksmith shop, his office, talking about the life of Noah, lots of exhibits like that. And then there's a whole walk through the pre-flood world with some startling murals and dioramas. Then when they go up to the third deck are more of the teaching exhibits. So teaching on the geology of the flood and the ice age, ancient man, flood legends, those sort of teaching exhibits. And then the Museum of the Bible people, Hobby Lobby, the Green family that are building the Museum of the Bible that opens 2017 in Washington, D.C., they have put in a massive exhibit specially for the Ark. And it is absolutely startling. So as people walk through there, I had media in there today, some other days actually, I had media in there. I spoke to media outside the Ark today. We have a problem going in today because of all that's going on. But when I've had them in there, they've just shaken their heads in disbelief, just jaw-dropping at what's in there. And it's going to be more jaw-dropping. I think when people go in there, there's nothing like this in the world anywhere. It's the biggest timber frame structure in the world. So it's a true timber frame structure. You can't say it's the biggest timber structure in the world. You've got to say timber frame. Because timber framing is a particular type of construction. It's got the big heavy timbers and massive logs. And the post and beam construction, you know, the mortise and tenon joints. And then it was built like a loaf of bread with a series of slices, and they're vents. And those vents are then all tied together. So there's 3.3 million board feet of timber in the Ark. An average timber frame home would be about 8,000 board feet of timber. That's got 3.3 million board feet, not counting what's in the exhibits, actually. On the third deck, we have Noah's bedroom, Japheth, Ham, Shem's bedroom, their dining room, their kitchen area. And I was just in there before, and thousands of items that they've handmade were in there. I think people are just going to walk in there, and it's going to give them a whole different view of Noah. You know, people tend to have an evolutionary view of history. They think, well, Noah couldn't do it. We're advanced. We're the advanced people. We have this technology. Instead of thinking, wait a minute, Adam was highly intelligent, and within a few generations making items of bronze and iron and musical instruments, the Bible tells us that very clear. If you have Thomas Edison, instead of we just happen to live at this era where we've accumulated certain knowledge to develop certain technology, look at some of those structures in South America. Look at the Egyptian pyramids. We don't even know how they put some of those things together, or how they had the architectural know-how, the engineering know-how to do it. And you know, one of the touching moments, I think, in regard to the history of this, was when we wanted to build the Ark. According according to the dimensions in the Bible, as a timber frame structure. So it's designed as a ship, but built as a building to the codes of today. So that's sort of that unique combination. And we realized we needed the expertise on how to design a timber frame structure and then how to build it. And there was an architect in Indiana, the architectural firm's called the Troyer Group, and Leroy Troyer, who heads that up, who was brought up in the Amish and Mennonite community, and he's been thinking about timber frame building all his life and working with lumber, and he designed a building that was called, it's now sold, but it was called the Farmer's Market in Elkhart, Indiana, and it was the biggest timber frame structure in America until the Ark. And so we went up there and met with him, and he really had a passion for designing timber frame structures. There's more timber frame structures in Europe than there are in America. And then he took us to this building, and we met with the heads of the Amish crew that actually did all the timber work, all the craftsmanship on the lumber. And I gave them the vision for the Ark and told them the whole purpose was evangelistic. The whole reason was to meet, the whole reason for the Ark was to reach people with the message of the gospel. And after I finished, one of those men stood up and he looked at me and he said, "You know, I believe God has been preparing us all these years just for this." And so two of those men became the heads of the Amish crew that built the timber frame structure here. And they're still here on site today. And they're here until it's all done. They're wonderful, wonderful Christian men. They love the project, and they've said to me a number of times, I've talked to them on site, and they've said, "We would never have done this, been away from our families like this." They go home for weekends. "We would never have done this for anyone else. They wouldn't do it for Disney, wouldn't do it for Universal. We've done this for one purpose, because we agree with your message of reaching people for Christ." And that was a very special moment, I think, in the history of this. And without them, supporters. 43,000 households donated to this, giving a total of 143,000 gifts. And we raised $100 million, $62 million in a bond offering, and that comes from all of our supporters as well. It's kind of investing money in the stock market or the secular world, said we want to invest it in something that's Christian. And then we raised $38 million by donations. And I see that as a miracle too. In this day and age, in this economy, a conservative Christian organization that stands on God's word, its purpose is to preach the gospel, not just have some entertainment facility. To have a facility like this, I think, is phenomenal, and it's sort of rare. I mean, this is Disney size and Disney quality. That's what it is. We're competing with those guys, but to teach people the truth about God's word and the gospel. So people are going to come from all over the world, and the research indicates up to 2 million people a year. I really believe it will be up around 2 million people. In fact, our researcher was a bit worried about like 3 million people in the last half of the summer will be open. But certainly, there's interest from all over the world. We've never had the media interest in anything like this. And it's going to double the attendance at the Creation Museum as well. That's the prediction of the research. So I think just about every group that's walked in to the Ark, they say they want to go to the Creation Museum too. So tourists are very upset by it.
Right.
And this is a tourist facility. I mean, Christians have freedom of religion in this nation, a free exercise of religion. And so the state of Kentucky offers a facially neutral tax incentive. And that is, if you build a tourist facility in Kentucky and they have their consultants check it all out, and it's obvious from what the consultants investigate that you're going to bring millions and millions of dollars into the state of Kentucky, then they'll give you a rebate on the sales tax paid within your facility, only within your facility, a rebate on that sales tax up to a certain maximum, depending on your capital costs, over a period of 10 years, beginning 1 year after you open. And so the media are still saying, we've used taxpayer money to build the app. And it's simply not true. We won't even start receiving those rebates until a year after it's been operational. We had to totally privately fund this. And they claim that we shouldn't be getting it, the so-called separation of church and state. Because we're Christian with a Christian message, we're not allowed to receive an incentive that is offered to any tourist group. Well, we went to the federal judge because the governor of Kentucky, the then governor, not the new governor, the then governor, stopped us getting that tax incentive. So we went to a federal judge, federal court, and the judge ruled in our favor, conclusively. You know, Christians can't be treated as second-class citizens. You have every right under the First Amendment. You have this facility. It's a tourist facility. It fulfills all the requirements of the Tourism Incentive Act in the state of Kentucky. It's a facially neutral program. If you're going to offer it to all these other groups, whether it's the Bourbon Distillery Museum, the Kentucky Speedway, Kentucky Kingdom, then you can't say you can't get it just because you have a Christian message. The judge said, no, they can't do that. And he said, you have every right to participate in this. And so we still have the secular media and secularists claiming that we're using taxpayer money. And as I say to people, here's the bottom line. If you don't want any of your money, if you're a Kentucky taxpayer and you don't want 1 cent of your money going to the Ark, do not come. Because once you come and pay a ticket, then money is going to the Ark. But if you don't come to the Ark and pay a ticket, none of your money, nothing. And here's the thing that really gets me. This facility, according to economic consultants who actually did research on this, outside consultants, they did an economic impact study, and they predicted the Creation Museum and Ark together in 10 years would have a $4 billion impact on the state of Kentucky at minimum attendance levels. We believe it's going to be way above their minimum attendance levels that they actually put in the study. And going to create 20,000 jobs. So as I say to people, okay, so, and this is the way the government looks at it. You're going to come into Kentucky and build a facility. You're going to bring this much money into the state of Kentucky. So we're going to give you as an incentive this much as a rebate on the sales tax in your facility. Because we get this much. And you have the secularists and the secular media saying you shouldn't be building this in Kentucky. You shouldn't be allowed to do this. I mean, it's prejudice against the Christian message. That's what it is. And then I just had them also ask me, because we asked the federal judge to rule on something else too. We're a religious organization, overtly so. And we, therefore, have religious preference in hiring. We only hire Christians. Well, the then governor said that was another reason why we couldn't receive the tax incentive. But the judge ruled, according to the Civil Rights Act of 1964, there's a Title VII exemption. If you're a religious organization, you're allowed to have religious preference in hiring. And so I just had one of the local TV stations asked me about that. So people are criticizing you because you have to sign a statement of faith to work here. And I said, you know, I'm pretty sure that the American Atheists would not allow someone like me to be the head of their organization. And I'm pretty sure Planned Parenthood wouldn't employ people who are ardently anti-abortion. I said, everyone has preference in hiring because of what you are. And the judge said, yes, you are a religious group. You said you are. You make it clear that you are. So you are entitled to that exemption under Title VII. And I also said to the media, I said, here's the thing. The majority of jobs created are outside the Ark. So by having this here, we're actually creating all these extra jobs. And people complain about us because we're hiring Christians. See, it's prejudice against the message. people in the Christian and non-Christian circles, you should be giving the money to the poor. Well, do they say that to every other facility? To the cruise ship that cost $1 billion to build? To Hillary Clinton that's spending $2 billion on a political campaign? Do they say that to every other facility? To Kings Island when they spend millions of dollars on a new roller coaster? To Disney when they spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on some big new ride? Or the Harry Potter castle and ride there at Universal? Do they say anything to any of them? No. So why do they single us out? Because they don't like the message. That's what it's all about. They don't want the message. And so it's persecution against Christians, and we see that in this culture. That's why we want to build something big and make a big impact. Why shouldn't we as Christians make a significant impact in the world? I mean, the secularists are getting Christian symbols removed from public places. What can we do then to reach the culture with the message? Let's do something like this. Disney quality, Disney size, and the secularists don't like it. Actually, the devil doesn't like it.
Speaking of big, this is very big. Scriptural accounts have said and state that it took more than 100 years to build the initial ark. The genesis of this until today, here we stand. What's the length of this project?
Well, first of all, I would dispute that the Bible tells us how long it took to build the ark. All right. I know a lot of people say it was 120 years because it says their years will be 120. But we really believe that that was basically a warning: in 120 years the flood will come. Mm-hmm. Because think about it. God talked to Noah, and as God was talking to Noah, he had sons who had wives. Now one of those sons, Shem, was 99 when he got off the ark. So he had to be, right? he had to be, what, 20, 30 years old maybe? He was already married, maybe older. So how long did Noah take the ark? So how long did Noah take to build the ark? We don't know. We have no idea. But I think the fact that the Bible says God is long-suffering, he was long-suffering in the days of Noah, and you look at 2 Peter 3, to God a day is like a thousand years like a day, because he's not willing that any should perish. So I suspect it was quite a while, because God was warning the people. So it could have been 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. It could have been something like that. Noah could have hired contractors. We've hired a lot of contractors. Lately there's been 400 contractors a day on site here. And some of those contractors are Christians and some are not. So it could have been the same for Noah. But our construction time here, we wanted to build it fairly quickly so that we could reach people with the message. And so it's basically been a 23-month construction time, which is quite remarkable for the size and for the complexity of this. You don't see it from here, but the ark is anchored to 3 7-story buildings. Give you an idea of the size of those buildings. They're 3 towers. If you put all 3 towers together, they'd be the size of a 200-room hotel. And there are 4 sets of exit stairs. They're like stadium stairs. They're so big, we're allowed to exit, we're permitted to exit 10,000 people at one time. Not that we'd have 10,000 on the ark. We could put 3,000 to 4,000 on the ark comfortably at any one time. And then there are restrooms at each level inside the tower, the middle tower, and then there's elevators in the end tower. So it's all handicapped accessible. It's been interesting. The most asked question I've received on Facebook, you know, the rest of social media, on call-in shows on radio, the most asked question is it handicapped accessible? And I think, why do they ask that? Because everything today has to be built ADA compliant. You know what I think it is? Because we're recreating Noah's Ark, they think they're going to have to climb up ladders to get inside and climb up ladders inside. But it was designed as a ship, but it's built as a building and it's all built to code. So it's all handicapped accessible so people can get in there. And that's only phase one. Phase two starts out here. It's going to be a walled city. Basically, the town where Noah lived, and there'll be a blacksmith shop and a village and Noah's house and that sort of thing. And then phase three is over here, actually, the Tower of Babel, and we'll have a lot of teaching on the issue of race and languages and nations, and then a first century village, and then a ride through the plagues of Egypt. So this is going to become a major themed attraction. It is now, but it's going to become even more so. We have about 800 acres here. So if you look, you sort of can see there's a bit of cleared land over there, but there's a parking lot over there, 4,000 cars. And then they get on shuttle buses, like the wrap one that you were on.
That's how they came up from the parking lot.
That's a mile shuttle road. But even the shuttle road itself, that ride, I think, is quite something. You know, it's a beautiful ride down the valley and across the bridge there. And we had to build a highway and a nice bridge there, as you can see. And then the zip line course, it's 9 miles of zip lines when it's finished. And you can see one of the towers here. That tower is almost 8 stories high. And there's also going to be a freefall there. And you can zip right across to these towers here, and then right across to the parking lot, across the valley.
Will that open in phase one?
Yes, that'll be open in phase one.
Okay.
I'm not sure when they're going to have which of the zip lines ready, but as we open next week, they're supposed to have some of the zip lines ready. We haven't worked out a schedule, but we do want to start on phase two fairly quickly once it's open, because we want to keep our designs.
Okay, I don't know if you can hear me back there. We're about a half an hour out here. We want to respect your time, so you know you'll be on your bus by 5:30 any time in Cincinnati. If you want to talk to Ken or me one-on-one, perhaps about Ken, maybe down here, or separately. So Ken and I will step down here if you'd like to talk to us and continue this press conference. Let's do it.
I think I told you tonight there's a zoo behind here.
Yeah,
Ararat Ridge Zoo and a petting zoo.
And that will be open next week.
Yes, in fact, the first animals start coming in the next day or two. It's a very different sort of zoo. It's a very nice zoo. We have camel rides and donkey rides. We're going to have zebras, ostrich, emu, yaks, kangaroos.
Nice.
And then there'll be, you know, the usual things like goats and little goats. And
so you must be going 24/7 here. Then,
they pretty well are.
To get ready by,
they pretty
by
are.
Next week.
Researchers working on how many kinds were needed on the ark, and we would say in most instances the kind in the Bible, the Hebrew would mean, relates to the family level of classification. Yeah. Kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. And so our researchers have worked out if we totally overestimate, this is probably double what it would be. Because in the fossil record you can't see the breed. Whereas what they've done in the modern world is, like, this dog breeds with this one, and this one, and this one, and this one, and this one over here. This one doesn't breed with this one, but you can still connect them all the way back. So we work out the limits of a kind. Mm-hmm. Fossil record, you can't do that. So our estimate is way overestimating, but we wanted to show, even when we way overestimate, and even for bats, we think there's one bat kind, but nobody's ever seen different species of bats in a breed. So we just count them as different kinds, but we suspect there's only one kind. But when you do that, they come up with, at the most, maximum, and way overestimating, 1,400 kinds. So two of each kind, seven of some. Now, some people would say it's seven pairs, some say just seven. So we say, let's take the seven pairs, so we even err on that side. Mm-hmm. And you're not looking at 16,000 animals, but you're looking at a few thousand animals on board Noah's Ark. And we have exhibits on that to show that you could fit them all in, because most of those animals are pretty small anyway. Most are not big.
I've heard a lot of negative comments about dinosaurs on board.
Yeah, you know, the reason the secular world always want to ask about dinosaurs, even most Christians don't understand about dinosaurs. So when people say to me, were dinosaurs on the ark? Okay, the first thing I need to say is, there was no word dinosaur back then. So there was two of each kind of land animal, seven of some, on the ark. In 1841, a man called Sir Richard Owen invented the name dinosaur for particular types of animals that come under that particular heading. So the reason they ask that about dinosaurs is, from an evolutionary perspective, they believe dinosaurs evolved into birds. So when they ask me, do you have dinosaurs in the ark? What they're really saying is, do you believe dinosaurs evolved into birds and became extinct? I don't believe in evolution. I don't believe dinosaurs evolved into birds. Two of each kind of land animal went aboard Noah's Ark. God made all the kinds of land animals on day six. And they say, well, did he make dinosaurs? The land animals that in 1841 were grouped together and they invented the name dinosaur, he made them because he made all the kinds of land animals. probably should never read it in the Bible. So, and actually, if you read Job chapter 40, verse 15 about Behemoth, and then read the description of Behemoth, the largest land animal God made, and you read the description, it sounds like something like a sauropod dinosaur. I would say that one of the kinds of dinosaurs, and there's probably, could be as few as 50, could be as many as 70 kinds of dinosaurs, nobody really knows. But the sauropod kind, I mean, when you look at that description in Job, you say, well, what's the largest land animal that we've ever discovered? Actually, it is a sauropod dinosaur. So why couldn't it be that? Well, dinosaurs didn't live with people. Well, wait a minute, now we get back to this again. And so we go on.
How did all those animals get along? Was it just something God put over them to get along?
Well, obviously God chose the animals because he brought them to Noah. We've also got to remember, in our modern world, that a number of the different species, if you even look at dogs, there are dogs that are aggressive, that'll attack and eat people. But then there are dogs that love people. So you see, there's even behavioral change, probably genetically, in our modern world as the species developed. So what were the kinds like that God put on the ark? Maybe in dogs there were no aggressive species at that stage. And because there was one continent, we believe, and probably not as diverse species, probably mean more akin to the original kind. The other thing is, it's interesting to note that after the flood, God did something to even create more of a chasm between man and the animals, to put fear of animals in man. And so maybe even some of their behavior changed in that regard. But the species we have today that we're familiar with were not on the ark. The kinds were on the ark. So when we see some of the aggressive cat species today, they were not on the ark. But their ancestors in the original cat kind were on the ark. And they could have been very different in behavior in some ways. And the other thing is, God remembered Noah.
How can we specifically pray for you?
Pray for us. Well, pray that millions of people will come to this. Pray for wisdom as I talk to all the media. We have next week, there's probably going to be 150 to 200 credentialed media here. They're going to ask all sorts of questions. We want non-Christians to come so that they'll be one to the Lord. But our big prayer point for this week is, as you can imagine, we still have some occupancy permits and they still have to pass all the fire codes and all of that, and they're working really hard on that. And all the inspectors are great, and they're working with us. But we have to do and want to do everything that they want us to do. And so, just pray that all that goes smoothly. We were hoping all that will be done before now, but I found in this world everything is harder than it looks. Everything takes longer than it does. And everything costs more than it does. And that's just the way it is. It's a fallen world. Things are supposed to happen and they don't. Companies send the wrong parts or whatever it is. I mean, it's a fallen world. So you can plan for all the contingencies you want, and then you find there are some you didn't plan for. But, you know, in a way we're sort of like at the Red Sea. We've been at the Red Sea many times before and asked the Lord to part the waters, and that's happened. And that's what we're looking at again, another Red Sea moment. But it's happening. But we need prayer for that this week, that all will go well. And one of the major reasons there is because this is a July 4th weekend. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, you have contractors and others who want to be on vacation with their family. So to open this weekend, and yet we might need some final touches on things. So that's what we need prayer for. There's a number of reasons. One is, at the Creation Museum we have 70 acres, and when we realized how many people from the research would come to this, we realized we didn't have room for parking, and we would need all our 70 acres basically for parking. So we needed another piece of property. And the other is that our marketing consultants believe it's really better to have it as a separate facility, because then it accentuates both facilities as sister attractions to encourage people to go to both. If they're together, then there's something about the way people perceive things that changes. And so it's really better to be a separate facility.
Why the decision to add zip lines into the experience?
Actually, there's a family that support our ministry that are experts in zip lines, and they're even in the Guinness Book of Records for some of the biggest, highest zip lines in the world. And they said, we want to support your ministry, we want to help you make this a family-friendly facility, and to help even attract non-Christians to come in, and for people to have fun, because Christians can have fun too.
Yeah.
And they said, we will come in, and we'll put all the zip lines in, and we'll look after it, and man it, and staff it, and they support us in doing
excellent.
That.
Excellent. What kind of animals will you have in the zoo?
Oh, okay.
You're one of my professors, too.
Oh, okay. They need me to come down here. What was the question?
What kind of animals will you have in the zoo?
Oh, there's going to be zebras, ostrich, emu, kangaroos, yaks, donkeys, camel, goats.
McCord.